ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week for your listening eargasm pleasure. Man, we only just managed to get on air today. There was something wrong with the connection. You know, it's like when you, oh, let's answer that. No, I don't want to answer it. Oh, come on, man, answer it, man. And he's like, no, I don't want to do it. You have to unplug and plug in your microphone again, man. See? And that's it. That's what kind of just happened now. It was quite stressful. But we're here now. And boy, do we have a show for you today, ladies and gentlemen. Allegedly. We're very special guests. James Horak and Crystal Clark. And James, when you read his bio from his website, you realise he's got a rather unusual background. In fact, you could say he's had an unusual life. But in recent years, James has become known for his revealing the true nature of strange objects that people have seen in many NASA, ESA and SOHO images of the corona of the sun. The SOHO is a strip club, by the way. And he calls these objects EMVs, which stands for electromagnetic vehicles. James also talks about sun control, the solar anvil, and humanity's call. And today we're going to find out from him exactly what he means by all of these things. And Crystal Clark is an author who is passionate about sacred science, and we'll ask Crystal to explain exactly what sacred science is shortly, but her personal goal is to help humanity realize its full potential in meaningful ways that not only expand awareness of the other choices that generally uphold, regenerate, and recreate life, of which there are many, but also to rebuild the bridge between the mind and the heart, the mystical and material, so that the peaceful and abundant paradise we all long for can finally manifest here in, around, and through us. And we also want to give a quick tribute out to Kevin Smith before we get started out in our chat today. I only learned about him yesterday. Still have never heard one of his shows. I mean, I'm a young person. Okay, I'm sorry. Some people know nothing about Justin Bieber. I know nothing about Kevin Smith. Maybe I got the short end of the stick there. But I think the two of you guys may want to like to say a few words about the loss of your good friend and radio talk show host Kevin Smith, who died suddenly a couple of days ago. James, Crystal,
you can go first, James.
Kevin was a friend of mine. We spoke frequently. I had been interviewed by him on a number of shows. He was the first time that I ever spoke out about the EMVs publicly. I had known Dr. Berggren and his associate, Casey. But I'd been associated on a forum and kept involved with his work and supported him over the years. But the question about the EMVs is of a high magnitude, because once you realize that these critters have a great deal to do with protecting us by farming the energy of the sun, by that I mean F-A-R-M-I-N-G, then you realize that the only reason the Earth and the other planets in our solar system are able to continue a lineage long enough for civilizations to come to fruition, then you begin to understand that there's a great deal more to astrophysics than just time and chance, something that astronomers and scientists today will not indulge in any way, shape, or form as far as considering. And Kevin was able to break through this sort of information gap and gave me a soapbox to introduce my approach to understanding nature and intelligent design in the universe, so that I was more or less an expounder of something that most people would not even consider until they had heard the things that I had to say, and even then objected to strongly because of their mental attitude or agenda.
And Crystal, do you have something to say about Kevin Smith before we continue on with the interview?
Yes. A lot of people know that saying, you can learn more about a person oftentimes by what they don't say. And Kevin had what he called Kevinisms. And one of his Kevinisms was the idea that, especially in the UFO community, there was a big black hole in terms of what wasn't being discussed. And he understood how important that was, and that was his focus, to try to dive into that hole and find out what was going on and bring it to us. And he was exceptionally good at it. He was very focused. Truthfully, I think he also was, I think that he also had a sense of things, you know, he was very logical. He was a straight shooter, but I think that he also had a little bit of maybe something else going on, because he just really knew where to look. And
intuition.
Yes, intuition, absolutely. He definitely had a touch of that. I don't know if he would see it that way, but I certainly do. And I think what's strange about it is that, you know, we live in a world where people have no problems copying each other if they think they can make a buck. But the things that Kevin did, no one copied, because he was really riding the edge in ways that other people just weren't comfortable doing. And he brought us a great deal of very important information doing that. So he was the one who explored that void for us. And now that he's not here, that void remains. And it's really too bad.
You know, it's funny that we should say this, because just yesterday, I have an older friend, Jonathan Eisen, who does this this magazine, Uncensored, who publishes a lot of UFO stuff in here, and basically everything else, the whole spectrum. And I said to him, you know, I'm really concerned, because when activists and incredibly talented and really wonderful people get older, they eventually die. And what I was really sad about is that there's nobody comparable, nobody who has really achieved their level yet, to come out and replace them, you know, to put on their mantle. And so whenever I hear of somebody like Kevin dying, I it's almost like I feel a loss on behalf of the human race as a whole. Do you sort of know what I mean?
Absolutely, and I agree wholeheartedly. It's a tragic loss for all of us, because he would go places other people wouldn't, and we were better for it.
Mm. I like you more and more, Vinny.
Yeah, I get that a lot. Now, on with the interview, thank you, Kevin Smith, wherever you are, for your various levels of awesomeness, openness, and whatnotness, considering I know nothing about you. And, James, let's talk about the sun. Traditional belief of the sun is it's a ball of furiously burning gas, occasionally sends out a sunspot, and occasionally, you know, wipes out electronic devices and maybe even goes supernova. And that's about all people know, really, about the sun. And you've got some incredible revelations to share that maybe sometimes goes contrary, but also adds and fills in a lot of the blanks. And I'd really appreciate it if you could lay it on me, brother.
The sun has a substructure. All planets have substructures. In effect, nature produces some very strange principles, but there is a design in how planets and stars are positioned, created, maintained, And if this were not true, there would be no survival of intelligence, and there would be no length to any kind of lineage that would permit the civilizations that we've seen and we have. And there have been many civilizations on this earth of our ancestors. We are progressing towards another extinction, and it will be the seventh. We've had a presence on Mars when we came into this system, and there's evidence, abundant evidence of our presence on Mars. And in fact, there are so many things hidden from us that there's more hidden than there is divulged.
Could I interject here for just a second? You know the thing that I love about the Mars photos that they send back from the little rovers that they send out? Okay, we're in the 21st century, right? And apparently NASA hasn't mastered doing color photos of the sky yet. Why? Because the sky is blue there.
Vinny, let me tell you something about that. I've got a little book here that I was taking images out of to show people what they're capable of on the moon. You see these images, you get these images of the moon that are blurred, that are that don't give you the true color or whatever. Well, there were so many better images taken in the late 60s around the Apollo missions than you see today. Besides the fact that, you know, this question about the face on Mars and Cydonia and a number of artificial structures there, we know very well that the rockets that carried ICBM warheads were capable of reaching Mars, and that we could put a spy satellite around Mars as easily as we could around the Earth. Are you going to tell me that we didn't have, at the time that Hoagland was being argued about what he had detected on Cydonia, are you going to tell me that they didn't determine that with a spy satellite that would be much cheaper than sending a probe to Mars?
Maybe they decided that they would Cydonia that information.
Well, they knew. Like I say, they had more than they divulged. And Kevin was so good, he would take some recent images from the rovers on Mars, for instance, and he would find a stream, a flowing stream. And then he would find what looked like a pump, and the fact was that pump was right where you would put a pump if you didn't want your valve to be burdened with sand. You'd put it where the turbulence was the greatest to keep that sand from bogging up that filter, so that the pump would draw on water and not get clogged up with sand. So, I mean, and a geologist called up during that particular show and said, yeah, that's a running stream of water, no doubt. So you can't, you know, you can hide a lot with lighting effects and a number of things that you do to these images because they're digital. You can enhance an image and you can de-enhance an image, and that's what they're so good at. And even though they were doing that with the solar images that have been coming in for many years now, finally, there were other agencies other than the Naval Laboratories, other than NASA, that were getting them too. They were getting feed. It wasn't being coded. So they were coming, you know, then NASA said, uh-oh, they're looking over our shoulders. So they finally, we were seeing the EMVs. Now, there were people that were seeing EMVs back in 2000 in the sun.
Well, James, we're coming to break now, and I think that's a good cliffhanger to linger on. People seeing electromagnetic vehicles, at the, around the sun. In fact, I believe I saw one of these images. It was like a flying saucer that was massive. It was like 500 miles in width or something like that, even bigger. I don't know. It was just crazy. We'll be right back after the break. At the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, Crystal Clark and James C. Horak are my guests. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. You know what's profoundly, I am living in a synchronistic realm. Guess what the name of that song is called? Knights of Cydonia. And weren't we just talking about Cydonia in the first segment there? And the songs that introduce the show and the segments and everything are on random. And there's about 40 of them in there. So there's a 1 in 40 chance of a song called Knights of Cydonia coming on, introducing us into a segment where we were previously just talking about Cydonia. I love my life because there's a little interesting things like that just make you go, yep, there's some weird Shiite Muslim going down and I haven't figured everything out yet. And I like the fact that I haven't figured everything out yet because it means I've got, unlike most people, an opportunity to learn something. Why is it that people think they're trying to put everything into a box, try to explain everything away, makes them more intelligent? Actually, what you're doing is limiting your own curiosity. Isn't that right? My very special guests are Crystal Clark and James Horak. Now, James, back on topic, you were talking about EMV vehicles next to the sun when they first discovered these images. What was it, back in the 60s?
Well, in the sun, they didn't become apparent to astronomers and a number of people because the professional astronomers weren't allowed to talk about them. If you're a professional astronomer and you make a discovery, you have to submit this discovery to the Office of Astronomical Telegrams, who reviews it and decides whether or not they'll give you permission to make public. And there are planets that have been discovered in our solar system that they're not permitted to talk about. There are four planets on top of the known ones that are not listed or discussed. And if you're a professional astronomer, you're out of work if you dare. And that's throughout the world. So, in 2000, when Hale-Bopp came through, there were a number of amateur astronomers that were, in fact, an amateur astronomer discovered it. But there were amateur astronomers that were trying to determine certain aspects that they considered anomalous about it. It had a double nucleation. And this, it came through twice. And on the second time that it comes through, passing between Earth and the Sun, as it's going out, I told a group of amateur astronomers at the time, I said, you watch it and you will see something in the sun you haven't seen before. And it wasn't because that the EMVs hadn't been there, but I knew that they would try to rent telescopes and observatories that were where the barrel of the telescope was in that quadrant and they would have a chance to see it. And they did. And not only that, but they could see that the EMVs in the solar activity, what you call sunspots, were interacting. And this group was known as the Millennium Group, not the television show, but this was what they called themselves. And I was in touch with them. Of course, some of the things I had to say were too far out. So, but I had been telling Dr. Berggren that they would be found in the sun. And he said, how do you know that? How do you know that? And yeah, he kept pressing me for an answer, and I gave him one that he couldn't accept. And that ended my direct communication with him. After that, I had to deal with his associate, Casey Dawkus, who's a lovely lady.
Yeah. So it's kind of like a my people will call your people kind of thing.
Well, he is an established astronomer. He has done enough. I mean, he discovered these EMVs in the rings of Saturn. And he was able to triangulate their size and see that they were building a ring, the A ring they were finishing off.
Well, are we talking about designer planets like in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy here?
They are responsible for every major system that has the potential to host complex life.
Terraforming.
That's part of it. That's going on in Jupiter right now. Do you remember a series of hits on Jupiter that were called Shoemaker-Levy, and they told everybody that these were cosmic comet fragments that were coming in from deep space? Yet they came in a straight line, and they hit a planet, one right after the other, over a course of a number of days.
Yeah, I
now
recall
that. I mean, when anything explodes or comes apart in space, pieces go off in different directions, just like they do in atmosphere. Even with less resistance, they don't stay in a line. And you see, there was never anyone in the scientific community that ever suggested in the least that these were under intelligent control, but they obviously were.
So we're talking about Saturn being, having extra rings added to it or having rings taken away, and Jupiter being terraformed right now. Hasn't that red eye thing on it, reduced somewhat? It was apparently some big-ass storm, and now it's, almost gone?
Yes. The first mention of these fragments hitting Jupiter was in a documentary on television, kind of like 2020. And they had an artist's depiction of these objects hitting right in the eye of that storm, what you're talking about, directly. Now, that was too obviously a proof that they were under intelligent control, so then later on NASA changed it around to different spots on Jupiter. But that's beside the point. If they hit the same, hit a planet coming in from deep space, millions and millions of miles out in a string, they were under intelligent control. There's no challenging that. But of course, if you leave that possibility out of the discussion, and you have a bought-off, paid-off control media, you know, it's what is not said most of the times that it's the biggest lie. Critical omission is what it's called in legal terms.
Isn't it critical omission?
That's right. Mm. And you know, I really...
Critical omission would mean something critical about knowing everything.
I really enjoy having my English corrected by someone from New Zealand, and I thank you very much. That is a distinction.
I remember one time I was on the United We Strike radio broadcast, and Karen was giving praise to the crew and everything, and she's talking about the ever-effluent Gary Johnson, and I say, well, you just called him ever-effluent. That means unlimited poo. Also, I was just thinking, Crystal, you've been very quiet here. Have you got anything to add into this little Jupiter kind of explosion thingy?
Well, one of the reasons that I eventually contacted James is because through my own experiences, I recognize that ignorance really is the greatest plague that we've ever faced, and it's intentional. The most important thing that we have not been taught is to understand intelligent design and creational design, and that we aren't being taught how all of this works, not only because this is part of the master-slave construct, you know, slaves aren't supposed to know how to read and write and figure things out for themselves, that's part of it, but the other part of it is that they're weaponizing creation, literally. And this is something that our predecessors, as James pointed out, this will be the seventh time we've done this, we've done all of this before, and we have never survived it, nor will we survive it if it continues this time. And what's so interesting about it is, because we don't have the knowledge we need to ask the right questions, we're not growing, we're not evolving, we're not answering the questions that we have now, which would take us, as James says, to the next step up. And then, I mean, there are questions that we can't even formulate because we don't know they exist, because we just aren't there yet. So what I appreciate about what James is sharing with people is that he's sharing creational design at the macro level. And I think that's really important. Because one of the lies that we've been fed is that the previous civilizations that they will admit were here, that suffered a catastrophic end, well, they like to tell us, well, there's just these cycles, they're solar CME cycles, or they're just pole shifts, or they're ice ages, and they just happen no matter what, and if you're just unlucky enough to live during the time that it happens, well, that's just too bad. But that's a lie. That is an absolute lie. And as James pointed out at the beginning, it takes time. It takes a long time for a civilization to develop. And there are mechanisms in place through intelligent design to ensure that we have that time. Otherwise, what's the point, right? It defeats the purpose of all of this if it's just randomly destroyed for no reason. It doesn't make any sense. So I appreciate what James shares, because for me personally, I did, it's kind of a long story, we can get to that later, but there were gaps that I found that I was looking for the answer to. And he's the only person I found who could answer those, fill in those gaps or resolve those anomalies and do it across the board in ways that don't cause more problems than it solves, which is something we just don't see. And I think that's important, because we are being duped into participating in our own demise because we don't know any better, and it will end the same way it's ended before. I don't want to see that happen, and that's the thing. It's preventable. It's absolutely preventable.
This reminds me, it's kind of like in computer games where it's a skill set, right, you know, you've got to be able to find patterns and so on and so forth. You get to such a point and you've got your limits, and if you don't achieve what it wants you to achieve, it's game over and then you have to start again. Is that sort of what we're talking about here? I mean, theoretically, if intelligences are capable of creating planets, creating life, maybe they're experimenting to see if a civilization can get to a certain point and cure its own ignorance, but we've never achieved it yet, so it's game over and back to square one.
Well, you have some problems that other peoples haven't had. You're unique in a certain aspect. You have the split consciousness. And this split consciousness is not always good. It allows you to be hypnotized. It's an easy way of being subjugated. You have more ambivalence, and it is something that manipulators can take advantage of. Your ancestors didn't have split consciousness and were reaching a very high level of culture and civilization. But something happened which ended all that, and the survivors came to Earth, or came to Mars. Earth was, at the time, was too hostile. And they were helped by a very advanced civilization to establish themselves there. And eventually, after about 50,000 years, they made the same mistake there that they had made in their own system that led to what astrophysicists term as a singularity. So they tried to establish a technology they were ill-prepared to do, that they had seen the ET communities. Most ETs, when they get to a certain point, join a community of other ETs, and they call this an extended community. And then no one really has to worry about anything, because someone's always got the means to solve the problems of someone else. So it guarantees survival. Well, they wouldn't do it, because your ancestors were headstrong, very proud people, wonderful civilization. And they decided they would build something like the solar anvil on their own. And they had two suns. Their system was binary, which complicated that. And they created something that you talk about black holes, and you discuss a number of other things, but there's something that hasn't come into conversation yet, and that's when you match energy of your star.
And we'll talk about more of that after the break. And I want to get a definition of what a solar anvil is, you know. It's just like, dude, do you whack out horseshoes on that, you know, like giant galactic horseshoes? What are we talking about here? We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. James C. Horak and Crystal Clark are my very special guests. Don't you go anywhere, folks.
The world we knew is gone. The conditions which framed and taught us our stance have gone with God.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose a sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. And my very special guests, Crystal Clark and James C. Horak. Now, where did we leave off? Don't quite recall. Hello?
We're here.
Okay, that's good.
Crystal, are you here?
Dale, Crystal. Mr. Dale. As Crystal's might have gone to take a WikiLeak herself. Okay, I forget where we were when we came out into the last segment there. But anyway, let's move on, because when we talk about the sun, when we talk about ETs and then things like this, a lot of people just kind of they switch off. Have you noticed that? And it's like a program, and the program is designed to not connect things like dots together, but in fact to act more like a firewall to prevent things that would threaten the overall program. This is why being open and honest about information often gets you fired. As we were talking about the astronomers before. Isn't that interesting?
Well, what you were talking about is a psychic block. And many people have it. Anything that comes near to disturbing their comfort zone, they shut up. And they do it unconsciously at a level. You can, if you were to spend a week with me where I live, and we would go out, say, towards evening as the light is changing and in the west for 3 or 4 nights, I would show you something that you, maybe you could see it, but most people could not see it until I described it for them because they don't have the context to allow it possible. So they don't see it. This is a psychic block. And in this case, it would be a plane that might come overhead and start going straight down, freezing in the sky. And this happens in the west from where I live, visible to me when I'm in my backyard 3 or 4 times a week without fail, sometimes more often than that.
Yeah, a lot of people don't really want answers, I don't think. They don't want to know, but their survival really depends on it.
Well, I found that truth is painful. We grow up in a society that rejects truth because it's traumatic and instead prioritizes comfort, you know? Oh, this truck's got cushioned and heated seats, for example, to keep your ass warm. Mate, I'm going to use some of that. And this thing over here is a ruthless criminal New World Order scumbaggery bunch of filthy psychopathic slash archontic entities that want to exterminate you. Well, that's not very comfortable. No, I think I'll reject that one.
Well, of course, but... You know, they talk about it themselves. They, you know, Bill Gates talks about vaccine and the usefulness of it to sterilize people. Goes to Africa with his wife and offers to give free vaccinations that are guaranteed to sterilize whoever they give those vaccinations to. And he is doing such wonderful things. He's a philanthropist, isn't he?
he's full of something, a pest.
Well, you know, he's part of this New World Order Agenda 21 and proud of it, boasts of it. And you had Ted Turner, he talks about population reduction, getting rid of 95% of the, quote, useless eaters, unquote.
Yeah. There's a massive eugenics agenda that is essentially, it's like a parasite that has latched onto the planet and is, well, essentially sucking the brains out of the human race.
Well, there are a lot of people that would like to claim they're reptiles, there's this ET conspiracy or whatever, and that's part of the plan that has been in the works 40 years, that they're in the last two stages of implementing this police state globally that they call the New World Order. They'll have the asteroid threat, and then next they'll have the hostile alien invasion, which is all poppycock. And I would like to explain why this on principle is poppycock. If you get to a level of technology where you are nearing star travel, just nearing it, not quite there, you are at a point of having to grow above your technology. Stop weaponizing, stop all the profit-taking and profit-making that goes along with selling instruments of war. You are at a point of nexus. You're either going to stop it and civilize your planet, or you're going to self-destruct with your technology. And that's what's happening today.
Again, yes, that's right. And, you know, I think there's something important about that, too, because, you know, the people that are doing this have, and I think they believe it on some level as well, that they're going to be able to go hide underground or hide off Earth. But, you know, this is the 7th time we've done this, and if they were ever able to actually go hide, set the planet on fire and bail and then come out when it's over, we wouldn't be repeating the loop, would we?
Well, see, because- see here's the irony of it. Okay. Now, the New World Order is full of psychopaths, killers, murderers, rapists, pedophiles, that kind of thing. Okay. Now, here's our escape plan. Lock ourselves underground with the worst satanic pedophile rapist archontic psychotic scum that the world has ever known for 100 years. How's that going to work out for you? I don't think they've thought this one through, bro.
It's almost karma for them. But
we are our own worst enemies, aren't we?
Well, there's so much more to it. You cannot survive what they have in mind, and for a number of reasons. Now, first of all, you've heard the expression, the biblical admonition: "He who lives by the sword dies by the sword." Oh, yeah. He who weaponizes any kind of science or devotes science purely to oppressive devices, to the exclusion of energy alternatives, to the exclusion of cancer cures, to the exclusion of what's beneficial for people across the board, and spends all this effort weaponizing entirely technology, are giving any opposition a reason to oppose them by building in defeat. And there are defeats that are in certain countries' nuclear arsenals that have been put there by the people that made those weapons. Not to mention one in particular that would have already started World War III if they hadn't been stopped.
Well, who stopped World War III?
Once it was one of these built-in defeats, and another time it was E.T.
Well, specifically?
Almost 2 years ago, Israel wanted to launch against Iran nuclear missiles, nuclear-armed missiles. Nothing would work. Netanyahu got on an airplane and flew to the Kremlin to raise hell with Putin because he knew only two countries might have that kind of technology. Of course, neither ones did. But he flew to the Kremlin to approach Putin and threaten him, raising the devil. Putin didn't have any idea what he was talking about, and eventually Netanyahu came to enough realization that he didn't. So he delineated his attack to, well, I want permission to attack Iran. And, of course, Putin said, absolutely not. And he said, well, you get in our way, we can hit Moscow and wipe you out. And Putin said, well, we will turn Israel into an ashtray.
Mm. Well, I think there's a lot of people who don't know what Netanyahu is talking about. I don't think you should trust just any old Yahoo, especially not Netanyahu. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen. My very special guests are Crystal Clark and James C. Horak. And bear in mind that this is a listener-supported broadcast, so if you are capable of visiting the VinnyEastwoodShow.com, there's Vinny with a Y because it's the most important question, and Eastwood as in go ahead, make my news. And make a donation on the little donation button. We'll set up an automatic payment through the subscribe button or the bank account, which has the numbers there on the homepage of the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. Back in just a few minutes, folks.